It's okay if I set this for you?
Please do. That's great.
Do you know if he wrote that role with you in mind?
Well, it was, you know, it's based on a book.
Right. But when he was writing it, did he, do you know if he wanted you for it?
I think
it,
he did, or? Yeah. I think that's what he tells me anyway.
Right.
No, I think he had me in mind from the beginning.
What kind of inspiration did you kind of capitalize on? Other than what was on the page, did you, was there a specific person you had in mind? There's obvious parallels there with certain
quotes. Yeah. What was the first part of your question was, what did you say?
Your inspiration.
Oh, the inspiration.
Like
the inspiration.
Maybe.
Well, you know, with all rules, you kind of start with yourself. You know, see what aspects of yourself can fuel the part.
Right.
And I'm a musician and songwriter myself, so I looked at myself, you know, how I related to music and the part. I'm a country music fan. And then one of my dear friends, one of my oldest friends, we go back to the fourth grade together. We took tap dancing lessons together, tumbled together, played guitar, painted. We were very creative guys together, and he wrote or co-wrote that song, "The Hold on You," you know, the kind of the song that weaves throughout the movie.
Right, that's a great song.
And he lives in Nashville, and he's an underappreciated. Thank you. He's an underappreciated songwriter, and that's what the majority of John Goodwin. Thanks very much. And so he was a big inspiration for me. And then my two buddies, Bone and Steven, you know, T-Bone and Steven, we go back to Heaven's Gate together. Thank you.
Like some bread?
Sure, thank
sure,
you.
Sure, yeah.
Sure, yes.
I have the lavash, Mediterranean rolls.
I'll do the lavash.
How many?
A couple, maybe. That's great, thanks.
You, sir?
I'll have one on the end here. Of course, thank you.
And we go back to Heaven's Gate, and that was a wonderful experience. We were all there for 6 months, and Christofferson,
right,
who was also a kind of a touchstone for me, he brought all his music friends, and both Stephen Bruton and T-Bone were both his buddies, and Ronnie Hawkins, and he had, you know, all these great great musicians with him, so we played a lot of music on that movie. And T-Bone and Steven being on the project, they were really inspirational for me. You know, T-Bone is a real musicologist. Well, both of them are. Both of them knew that music inside and out, and where it came from and the roots of it. And so they were, you know, wonderful. Steven was, is a working musician. You know, Bone has kind of like made it now. He's scoring films and stuff. And he still plays, but it's a different level of playing. You know, Steven is on the road and, you know, working it. And he would constantly give me little ideas. You know, as an actor, you're always looking for little details that let the audience into the world, you know. And so he would give me a lot of specific things, like that opening scene where, you know, when you arrive at that thing, you know, when I'm driving on the road like that, I always have a sparking spot, like this in that sparking spot, you know. It's funny you empty that. So those little things, you know, that's kind of, they add up.
Right.
Know?
I like that you always had your pants unbuttoned when you were driving.
Yeah.
You want to be comfortable while you're driving.
It's,
makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So then it's fair to say, I guess, that when Scott didn't just get you the actor, he got everything you brought to the project, right?
Sure, yeah. That's always the case. Yeah, that's always the case. And also, Scott was another inspiration because he, too, really knows that genre, you know, the music, and loves that music. And then, of course, there's Waylon, you know,
right,
and Willie, and Bob Dylan, you know. I one of the things I remember looking at with T-Bone was, have you seen that that documentary of Dylan at the Newport Film Festival. Are you a Bob Dylan fan?
Yeah, I am. No, I haven't seen that though.
Oh, you've got to get it. It's really wonderful. It's the Newport Film Festival from 1963 to 1965, Dylan at the Film Festival. So you see his whole arc of being a, you know, folk musician and going electric, you know, and it's the electric stuff is phenomenal. I mean, it's just really great. And so just kind of, you know, watching those musicians. Greg Brown, who also wrote a song in the movie. You know, are you familiar with his work?
Not really.
He's a great musician who it's really wonderful how he's kind of done it on his own terms. He's not with the big label, you know, but he's got a lot of loyal fans. His big break came with the Garrison Keillor, you know, the Prairie Home Companion. You know, he played on that a lot, and he wrote the song that I do in the bar solo, you know, and his buddy Bo Ramsey, who plays guitar for him. Both of those guys were inspiration. Their music and just, you know, knowing him a bit, and that was very helpful.
Well, it's interesting. It sounds like this was just the perfect role for you in so many ways.
Oh, man, I'll tell you, it was just a dream come true, you know. Mm-hmm. Doing the music, working with my dear friends.
Right.
Valdemar, the production designer, he also worked at Heaven's Gate. He was an actor in Heaven's Gate. He became this big production designer. And the chance to work with my old buddy, John Goodwin, you know. I mean, it was just a dream come true.
Very cool. Yeah. I like the look of the character, too. He definitely gives off a Hank Williams, Christofferson vibe, kind of the look you have throughout the film, left off the screen, especially when you're on stage with the aviators on, the glasses, and just looks like Hank Williams Jr.
Right, good.
So at what point, you know, how did the script come to you? How did the process happen? Were you aware of it beforehand?
Well, it came to me a few years ago, and I was busy, you know, when it comes to me. That's one of the reasons I don't like to work very much, because whenever you commit to something, there's always something that is coming down the pike that you won't be able to do because you're doing something else, you know. So I try to really really delay engaging in the project for that reason. You know, I want to make sure it's something that I really want to do. And also the music, the idea of a music story, a music movie. I had a wonderful experience working on The Fabulous Baker Boys with Steve Clovis, who's another first-time director and writer. And what they, you know, did with that movie, I thought was so wonderful, that to do another music movie and not match that, or, you know, come up, they set a pretty high bar there. So I was concerned about that. So when a music, and there were several music scripts that came down the pike, but if you didn't have the music, like what music are you going to have? And sometimes the script would have, you know, lyrics or, you know, little samples, and they wouldn't be right. And this one didn't have anything. It was just no music, you know. And I thought, well, maybe I could write the music, or, you know, my friend, but then I just, you know, like I said, I was busy, so I didn't focus on it. Then a year or so passed, and I ran into Bone somewhere, T-Bone, and he said, you know this movie Crazy Heart, the script? I go, oh yeah, yeah. He says, well, what do you think? It's pretty good. I said, yeah, it's pretty good, but, you know. And he says, well, let's do it. I said, you're going to do it? He said, yeah, if you will. And I said, yeah, well, God, that's wonderful. Then there's the missing piece, you know.
Right. Every single one of those songs sounds like a hit.
And then it all started to fall together, you know. And then Bruton got involved, and my buddy got involved, and then Scott is just a wonderful director. You're going to be hearing a lot from this guy, and a writer, and, you know, he's an actor. And have you met him at all?
Not yet. I'm looking forward
to it. He's just a, you know, charming, enthusiastic, confidence-building kind of guy. He sets a great atmosphere for it all to go down.
How does he do that?
Well, just being who he is, I guess, you know, the way his approach on life, you know. He he cared so deeply about the material and this world and really wanted to do it really well. And then he was buddies with Bob Duvall, you know, who's kind of the godfather of the whole thing. It all kind of came from him, you know. And so that built his confidence, you know, and he built everyone's confidence around him. You know?
How did Duvall get involved?
I think Scott brought him the script.
Yeah. You know?
And they'd worked together in, I think, a miniseries or something as actors together.
Right.
And they became friends. And Bob saw new talent when he saw it.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have that. It's a Tender Mercies connection.
Yeah.
It's nice to have that.
Yeah, that's true, too. And then to have, you know, the cast of the movie. God, you know, Maggie.
How'd you get along with Maggie?
Oh, God. One of my favorite actors I've ever worked with.
Why is that?
She's just so game and so into it, you know. When I come on, when I start a movie, you know, we only have a certain amount of time to do what we've got to do, and you want to get as deep into it as you possibly can, and so you get your best work up there. And I'll always come onto a set, and you're looking for comrades, you know, people who will throw kindling on the fire and get this fire going pretty quick so we can get some good stuff going.
Right.
And there's some people who you can just tell are up for it, you know, are up for the get, you know, kind of approach it that same way, and they want this thing, and they're not too concerned with ego or, you know, how they're coming off. They're really looking at the whole thing and approach it in similar ways. You know, there's many different ways to approach this work, you know, when you find somebody who kind of approaches it in a similar way, you can, you know, really get the ball rolling quickly, you know. And that was the case with just about everyone on the film. I mean, I don't only do it with actors, but I do it with makeup people, you know, everybody, because it's a tough job and you need comrades, you know.
Yeah.
You want people to inspire you and encourage you and, you know.
Sounds
keep
like
it going
a
like
pretty
that.
Breezy production, I guess.
It
how
was
long did
great.
It take?
It was like one of the happiest, I don't know, 10, 12 weeks, something like that.
Okay. Very cool. With the something I did want to mention, too, about the Colin Farrell character, it was just briefly touched on in a line, but they ask, is he real country or something along those lines? And I like that was included, because as a fan of country music, but certainly not most of what's out there today, it's called country music. I like there was some kind of indication of that. Do you have any opinion on, you know, popular country music today versus what it could be or anything along those lines?
Well, you know, you like what you like, and everybody's got an opinion. You know, it's funny, they, you know, same thing like with movies that are going down, you know, these giant $200 million movies and you know, big, kind of spectacular things, and some people don't like those, you know. Some filmmakers don't like those, and so that kind of breeds this other, you know, the opposite of it, you know.
Right.
The 100,000, like, well, one of my favorite movies was a couple of years ago or last year, Once, did you see that? Another music movie.
Yeah,
I thought that was probably the best movie that year. Not only I know it won the best song, but I thought that was a wonderful movie for what, $100,000, man.
Yeah.
God. And so, what's kind of a shame is that in movies you've missed that middle section. I mean, you've got these big ones, and it's very hard to get like a $30 million movie made. You know,
yeah.
But now the same kind of goes with music. You've got this very sweet, you know, overly produced country music, and then reaction to that, you've got really gutsy, rootsy kind of stuff, you know, real spark, real spare, and so they both kind of fuel. They both kind of fuel each other.
You need one to have the other.
I think it's just kind of the natural progression. That they kind of go together, you know.
Did you use were those your own instruments up there, or did they have instruments for you? I'm curious about that, since you're a musician.
Yeah, I had a I had they weren't mine. I you know, kind of had a certain look in my mind, you know, that, you know, that Gibson, you know, J45. Buddy Miller played the stuff, a lot of the stuff on the record, and or the, you know, the soundtrack, and he let me use that guitar, one of his guitars, and then I ended up buying the guitar that he recorded with. It was another J45, wonderful guitar. And then Gretsch gave us these wonderful prototypes of the Country Gentlemen's, you know, that were no longer made, and we used those. And it was great. And again, Bruton was on top of all of that because he knew all of the contacts with all the guitar makers, and he's well respected in that community. Are you aware of Chris's Christofferson's album? Was the Pilgrim? Is that what it is? The title of it.
Yeah.
And that's Bruton.
Oh, okay.
That's Bruton. Just basically Bruton and Chris. You know.
Chris is one of my heroes because he spells his name like I do. Been dealing with that since childhood, always having to say with a K, with a K.
With a K.
It's nice to be able to point to somebody like that when you're a kid and say, look, he does it too.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you something about the, was this filmed on location? Were these real dives in certain areas?
It was all in New Mexico.
All of it?
Yeah.
Was
in Santa Fe.
Were these places
wonderful.
Like... I mean, I'm sure there was some dressing involved, but is it kind of like what you see is over there?
As far as like
the bars and the various dives.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think, you know, with the bowling alley, I think they put up, you know, threw up a stage, you know, in the bowling alley that was there. But that's probably what they would have done at that bowling alley, you know. And the bar was you know, local bar, and they found that beautiful theater at the end. I think where that was, I can't remember the location, but it was spectacular.
Looking out over the mountains.
Yeah.
And stuff, yeah. Yeah, it was nice. Yeah, I was just curious if they built those sets. Yeah, I can never tell, frankly.
Yeah. Well, this, like, again, production design, you know, that's such an important part. And we had Valdemar, who's did a brilliant job. You know, all those little details, you know, they kind of come together. Can you send our waiter over when you choose? Thanks.
Thank you very much. They're filming a lot of stuff in New Mexico lately.
Look at that tax break, man.
Yeah.
California ought to wise up.
Right.
Everybody's moving out of town.
Speaking of which, you live up in Santa Barbara, right?
Yeah.
How do you like that?
I love it. It's wonderful.
I go up there for the festival every year.
Oh, yeah. It's getting bigger and bigger, that thing.
Yeah. It's nice to be disconnected from LA.
We got shook out with that earthquake back, 15 years ago, that big one in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
And looking around, our house was, you know, it was the last night we spent in that house. It got shook pretty bad.
Really?
And we ended up in Santa Barbara, which is just great.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. So you're doing True Grit now. Has that been a pretty easy transition?
Well, we haven't really started it. I mean, we start shooting in March, and haven't really even cracked the script.
Oh, really?
Or started,
okay.
You know, working on it.
Okay,
I'm excited about it.
Hi. Hello. Hi. Would you like to order?
Sure.
Do you need a minute?
No, I think we're all set.
Okay, go ahead.
That shrimp, that grilled shrimp, what?
These are the specials of today.
Yeah.
The first four items are the specials, just to point that out.
And what's your favorite flavor? What do you like?
I like the seafood salad. I like our salmon.
Yeah.
The fish of the day is very nice. Benzino.
How's the grilled shrimp and asparagus salad?
It's lovely. It's a nice, light salad. There's four large grilled shrimp.
Uh-huh.
Salad in the middle with citrus segments. It's nice and light.
Is it chopped or anything?
It's not chopped. We can if you want. But just for the lovely presentation, it's not chopped.
Yeah.
But that can be done. We have
okay. I'm going to do something weird here. I think I'm going to have a
okay.
That shrimp salad, if you can chop that up for me.
I'll be happy to.
You can chop up the shrimp, too.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to take the spicy ahi tuna tartar, too.
Tuna tartar.
And that can be just kind of, you can bring it all together.
At the same time?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And also, do you have a pillow or something I can put behind
okay.
my chair? Thank you.
Yes.
I was going to get the same thing, but you said the seafood salad.
Seafood salad is very good.
Oh, now let me see. Now you're making me jealous, man. What is describe that.
It's a pretty generous salad in a bowl. Nice mixed greens. It has cucumbers, tomatoes, and then it has lobster, crab, and shrimp.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. You're going to give me that
one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you chop that one up, too?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll do that instead, too.
Okay,
I don't
want
to be jealous.
Instead.
And you can have some of my tartar.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Do you want yours chopped as well, or as it comes?
As it comes, fine.
Okay.
Maybe, yeah. Thank
I'll
you.
Pillow.
Okay, so yeah, I guess I thought it was closer to production than that. I hear they're going to be a little sillier with it than the original film.
Sillier?
The trigger.
I don't know. You never know those guys. They usually kind of have both stuff. I mean, I know it's going to be closer to the book.
Okay. I've actually never read the book. I'm not a huge
fan
of the original
book.
Movie,
the book was kind of like a big. It was pretty big when it came out at the time.
You a big Westerns fan?
I'm a big.
Westerns fan?
Yeah. Yeah, what a great period.
I'm hoping that the genre can make some kind of comeback.
I think it will. Are you a fan? Yeah.
I was always a fan of Once Upon a Time in the West. It's my favorite. I love Eastwood stuff, too, of course.
Yeah.
The stuff they've been doing, like The Assassination of Jesse James.
I didn't see that. Was that any good?
Oh, it's my favorite movie of probably 10 years.
Really?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
That was the one with Brad Pitt?
Right.
And it's good, huh?
I
missed that one.
Really slow, kind of methodical movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like classic American Western. Victorian Western.
What do you think of Heaven's Gate?
I like it.
Yeah, huh?
Talk about
bringing you back into the times, man. God. I saw Vilmos the other night, the guy who shot it. You know, we were reminiscing about it. My God.
It's a great movie.
People give, Cimino in that movie such a bad. Ooh, thanks. Thank you. Such a bad rap.
Yeah.
And it kind of grows on you because, like you said, you know, this is very methodical, and if you're used to the MTV quick cuts, that kind of music video kind of thing, it's going to be distracting. But if you get with the rhythm that the filmmakers,
I always thought it was pretty authentic.
Yeah. Oh, it was. God. Man, really great. We had some wonderful times in that one. Can you imagine?
It had to have been a massive.
Huh?
It had to have just felt massive when you were working on it.
It was wild. Cimino, if you weren't working that day, and usually you weren't working because it was so many scenes, he had all the actors there, you couldn't leave, you couldn't go, when you weren't working, you would go to Camp Cimino. Everybody would have, different tasks that they were practicing in the movie, like, cockfighting or. Writing, or speaking Yugoslavian, all the kinds of different things, and it kind of brought us all, very close. We all felt like we had really been through something after that.
I wanted to ask you about Starman too.
Uh huh.
One of my favorites. I actually watched it recently for the first time in a very long time. Some friends were over, and they had never heard of it. I couldn't believe it.
Hmm.
I was like, oh, you've got to see this performance. You've got to see this movie. And they loved it, of course.
Oh, good.
What was that experience like working with John?
That was great. I mean, it was such an interesting role.
How do you begin to play that role?
Okay, how do you... It was... Well, again, you kind of I approach most of the parts the same. Really, you look at yourself, aspects of yourself that you can draw on, and ones that you want to kind of kick to the curb that don't really apply. Which, in this case, Starman was most
humanity.
Of the, because it's everything. And then I look at the friends that I know personally that remind me of this guy. So I'd go through my phone book and say, what friends are in this book that I would not be surprised if I found they were an alien? And there was a few of those guys. One of those guys was a fellow named Russell Clark, who was a dancer. He was very, you know, he was very kind of interesting, you know, movements. And I thought, oh, maybe I should hire Russell to teach me some dance and kind of approach this thing like a dancer. And I felt if I kind of cracked that opening scene, you know, the opening, very beginning scenes, that then it would be a process of just becoming more human as the film went on. So I worked with Russell a lot on just that birth scene. And I remember one day I was kind of practicing on my own at home in the nude in my office with the video camera on me because I wanted to, you know, check out what I was doing. I had to do it. And I'm, you know, doing this thing nude with the video camera, and I hear the door open, and I look over, and it's my wife coming in. And she looks in. Just a weird image in my mind. But that's the way I kind of approached it, and that it was almost like imagining that I was somebody in a human body, as if it was a ride, you know, as if it was not myself, you know. But something else
kind
that
of
I
like
was,
resistant in a way.
Huh? Well, like
resistant to what you would.
Well, not so much resistance, but like as if, you know, imagine you go to Disneyland and there are a bunch of bodies, you know, they're just like that, and you can get in the, you know, crawl in the ear or something. Now you get to drive that around,
right.
You know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And then the idea of impersonating a human being. So that, like, you're sitting there like this, you know, now you're sitting like that because you want to be, you know, comfortable, you know. So Starman would see that, and rather than knowing why you're there, he would be there, but it wouldn't be for the purpose of that, you know. It would be just to impersonate that, you know, and a bad, kind of a bad impersonation. And then as he got on throughout the movie, he became more and more human.
That's fascinating. That's one of the coolest Oscar nominations of all time, too. If they would recognize it.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think of the Oscar buzz that's swirling around this new performance?
Oh, it's exciting, man. I'm excited just to draw attention to this movie that I had such a great time on. I think it's so good. It's a pretty. I've been at it for a long time, and this feels, you know, semi-rare here. You know?
Yeah. Well, you're aware that the sentiment out there is that you're overdue for an Oscar. You're aware of that, right?
Well, the winning of the Oscars, not that's. I mean, it is. You can't. I'm not gonna. I'd be.
I'll have another one of those.
I'd be lying if I said it wouldn't be wonderful, you know, to get something
right.
Like that. But
thank you.
No, I'm fine, thanks. But you know, there's an aspect of the Oscars and awards in general in the movie biz where it's sort of a chance for all of the filmmakers to, you know, wave their flag and say, check out, look at our movie, you know. So, like, now I understand there are going to be 10 best movies, right? So, you know, that's kind of I see that as kind of a good thing, you know, for the business, you know. I mean, it's given all these other movies a chance to, you know, raise attention, you know, and make people interested in their product, you know, what they do. I went to the Governor's Awards or whatever, I don't know what
right.
They call it. Yeah.
The other day.
Yeah, which they've separated, I guess, probably for that reason, because they got 10. And that was really the great thing, because there you have, you know, they're giving lifetime achievement kind of awards. And
you presented to Gordon Willis, right?
And I presented to Gordy, yeah, and that was really great. I hadn't seen him in a long, long time. And that's another aspect of, I guess, the awards that's fun for me, is just, you know, seeing all the guys that you've worked with and getting together. But the winning of it, you know, there's a downside to that too, you know.
What's that?
Well, I remember, you know, this, you know, being the four times, you know, that I've been nominated, you know, when you say, they call somebody else, and then you go, do I have to get up there, man? You would think being an actor for as long as I've been, that getting up in front of people and giving a speech or something like that. But no, I'm just as nervous or more nervous than other people, I would think. So it's kind of a relief. And then there's something about, there's something kind of cool about, being the underdog, you know. I mean, that's how I like to approach my work anyway, not so much like, hey, watch what I'm going to do, you know, I'm the award winner, I'm going to do some hot shit here, you know.
Right.
I'd rather say, I don't know, that's good, you know, kind of come in not knowing so much and not having such expectations and all those kinds of things. So that's a certain weight with awards and fame in general that you have to kind of work with, you know, and not let it get you down, you know.
Speaking of the potential for a win, Rod tells me to tell you that you should have won for The Contender. Are you aware that you are Obama's favorite to be president?
That's right. Yeah, Rod told me that. That really put a smile on my face. I love that. Rod is a terrific director, by the way. I really enjoyed working with him.
Yeah, that's still my favorite of his.
And that was a world that he knew so well, too, you know, and really loved. And his enthusiasm, again, that's so important. For me, I love it when a director has that kind of enthusiasm, and sort of contagious, you know, and you kind of get with it. And he wrote so well. He was, again, a guy who was not only directing, but he's writing. So if something goes awry, he can fix it. Like, I don't know if he told you the story about the climax of that movie. Did he ever tell you about that? Well, the climax of the movie but it was rewritten. Originally, you know, the FBI guy who's kind of tracking around, I can't remember the story, really. But he was a day player, you know, who was only going to work this one day, or maybe he worked one other day to kind of set him up. And he was like, you know, looking around, kind of trying to figure out what was going on and everything. And the climax, as it was written in the original script, this guy came, and then he gave this kind of what genre of movies you call it? Was it where the detective comes in and they're all in the room and he says, "And you did this, and you did this." You know, I don't know what that's called. You know, you've seen it a lot in older films, and that was kind of the scene. And we've, up to this point, we've had a wonderful time in the movie. All the actors are really enjoying what they've been doing, liking working with each other, liking working with Rod. It's all going well. And now it's kind of like towards the end of the movie, and we have this big scene, the climax. And this guy comes in. He's not a bad actor at all, but he starts doing this scene, and it just like felt off, man, just terribly off. And towards the end of most movies, the financiers are getting nervous because, you know, usually you're over budget and they don't want any changes and they're, you know. And so we're doing this scene, and I'm looking over at Joan and looking at Gary Oldman. They're all in the room, you know, they're kind of like looking at some fuck. And I went up to Rob and I said, "This is fuck. This is terrible, man. What's going on?" He goes, "Is it?" "Yes." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Yeah. All right, let's break for lunch and I'll go work on it." So he came back, and the scene is, he just changed, took that guy out of the scene and had me just say, "You're fucked." You know, remember the line? He just shortened it, condensed it. And that, from my mind, what took great, art balls to do that. You know, at that point of the movie, you don't know if it's going to work. You know, it's, you didn't have to check with the execs, and you know, all of those things. That, you know, because there are other people. It's funny how people act in the midst of a tense situation like that. Like, what are we going to do? Some guys get very nervous and say, no, we got to just stick to the script. That's our plan, you know. But Rod was open enough to, you know, think on his feet like that and changed it. And, you know, wonderful. I was his first interview.
Really?
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
For which movie?
I think it might have been the one with Jane Fonda, I think. The Morning After.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah. That's I never knew that.
I think so, yeah. Check up on that. Ask me if that's true or not. I think it is.
What was your approach to playing a president? Obviously bringing yourself to it and everything, but how did you want this movie president to...
Well, looking, as I told you, my method... you know, looking at myself and then looking at people closer. So the person that was close to me that reminded me of this guy very much was my father. He was very, he was a very gregarious guy and loved what he did. He loved showbiz. And that, you know, kind of reminded me of Clinton a little bit. Clinton really seemed to enjoy that position of being the president. But mainly it was my father. You know, it was like if my father was, you know, president, what would he be like?
Interesting. Yeah, he did. The character certainly has the lust for the position.
Yeah, he just loves that. Yeah.
I love the shark sandwich scene.
Right. Yeah.
As always. Well, yeah. So your other nomination was for The Last Picture Show. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw Peter at that governor's thing.
Last time you saw him.
Maybe a year or so ago. We've kept in touch. We did Texasville, which was a wonderful experience doing, you know, a sequel to that movie 20 years later with the same cast, same director, same town, which looked just the same, but it had a big black glass bank dumped in the center of it, you know. Thank you. Thank you. Please. And we're talking about doing a third one. You know, McMurtry wrote a couple more books based on that character.
And, some in this one?
Just a little, yeah, sure, a little bit. And that's great, thank you. Thanks.
Enjoy.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And McMurtry, you know, you can't get any better than him for dialogue and stuff like that. So I hope that comes to pass.
How did it feel getting that kind of awards recognition early on in your career?
That was amazing. That was totally unexpected. You know, there's no, you know, campaigning or any, you know, no interviews like that we're doing here. Nothing like that. It was just, I remember getting a call, just living up in Malibu, and I went for my little bachelor pad up there, and getting a call saying you've been nominated for an Academy. Yeah. What? Are you early in the morning, like 6 o'clock in the morning? God, that was wonderful.
Yeah, I imagine it was a much different, this time of year was a much different thing 10 years ago and earlier, you know, as far as the campaigning, like you said.
Yeah.
Because it's such an industry now.
Exactly.
And
it's, you know, there is that aspect that you can't ignore, that it's like, you know, it's a chance for all the movie guys to come out. It's a way of marketing the film, and which is part of the job. I mean, you know, like I was saying, my father loved all aspects of making you know, doing showbiz. You know, dug interviews and dug the working of it, and also dug the selling of it, you know, and he was my teacher. And,
so any reason you wanted to become an actor?
Well, I didn't originally want to become an actor. You know, when you never want to do what your parents want you to do. You know, and my father, unlike a lot of actors in general, don't want their kids to be actors. You know, but my dad really wanted to turn his kids on to it. You know, not in a vicarious kind of stage parent way, but just, hey, you know, this is a great life, you know. And you know, I remember being a little kid, you know, 8 years old or something like that, and saying, you know, hey, you want to, as a little kid, and see how, you know, do you want to, you get out of school. oh yeah, he says, yeah, and you get some money, and maybe buy some toys. Oh, okay, you know, I'm very, kind of resistant, and I wanted to be a musician, be an artist. I had other interests, and it was really kind of late in my career. Maybe I'd done 10 movies, you know, I'd been nominated for an Academy Award, you know, but it'd been, you know, maybe 10 movies under my belt before I said, oh, this is, you know, I can do this for the rest of my life and still do my other interests, but this is something that I really want to do.
So he told you you should do this, it's a great life, was he right?
Absolutely, man. Wow. Wonderful.
You definitely seem to put off the vibe that you're in love with your job. You really enjoy what you do.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't want to say it's rare, but it's certainly, I don't get the positivity out of as many of the other people I speak to in the industry as I do you, I guess.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So it's nice to come across.
Well, that's, you know, maybe that's when you say you look out for other people, you know, the other people that kind of get that kindling to help you work. Those are the people that dig with their job and are like, yeah, come on, you want to jam? What you got? You know, let's go. You know, that's inspiring and makes you play. You know, play well. Help yourself to these guys too.
I don't think we've ever had those. Have you ever had any interest in the industry other than acting to direct anymore?
Well, I mean, besides, music, I still like to perform and write music and play music. It's a big joy of mine. Directing, I would like to do one of those. I'd like to do, some directing. I'm a little reticent to do it because I know what it entails. You know, it's like a year out of your life, easy. And to direct, it would be a project that I would really have to be engaged in. Like I was telling you before, I spent a lot of energy not doing
this.
You know, like, because I know it kind of takes you, it prevents you from doing, you don't know what, you know, that might come down the pipe. So it would have to be something that was, you know, really bowled me over. Almost that, you know, I wrote a, I told this story in another interview, so you might have heard it, but it kind of sums up my process pretty well. Stop me if you have already heard it.
Sure.
I had a dream that I made a painting of. And the dream was me going down a very wide a river. Pretty wide, you know, like maybe 50 yards across, something like that. Big cliffs on either side. And they're beautiful.
Very good. Thank you.
And whirlpools, these huge whirlpools, the size of this room. And my task is to navigate down these whirlpools down the river. And at the vortex of each river was a jewel. And I would be going down to navigating this, and I'd look at the jewel, and I would go, and I would start to go into the whirlpool. And I'd go, oh, it almost got caught. And I'd go out and then see another one, and I'd get kind of mesmerized, and I would get stuck. And oh, no, I'm stuck. And that is the painting, right? And the title of the painting is Jeff Makes a Decision. And that's my decision-making process. I try really hard not to do it until I can't help but do it because it's just too, it's an offer that I can't refuse. You know, it's too special or, something,
Has that mentality, the attitude to be as loose and keep things available as possible, has that ever caused you to miss out on something, a role that you wish you had taken?
You would think about that. Maybe. I can't think of one. Usually I'm so into what's going on, that I don't have that. Ooh. No. I mean, I've been, I've I've wanted parts that I haven't gotten, but ones that I've been offered that I've turned down. Seems like there is something, but I can't think of it. Nothing's coming to mind. Maybe as we go on, I'll think about it.
Obviously, it wouldn't be anything that has haunted you because it would have left a
mark. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So, how about Iron Man? How was that experience?
That was wild. Again.
It's only a matter of time before they come calling Creed into a comic book movie these days.
No, that's right. Well, I just finished Tron.
It was kind of a comic book
movie. Right.
But Iron Man, I mean, what I'm left with in that one is working with Downey and Favreau, both those guys. Man, are they lucky they got those guys.
Right.
Because both of them are great improvisers. Both of them are great actors. And John's a wonderful writer and a great director as well. And they had no script, man. They had a kind of an outline, but we would show up for big scenes for the day, and we wouldn't know what we were going to say.
Really?
Yeah, and we'd have to go into our trailer, and we would work on the scene, trying to say, I say, okay, now Bob, you play my guy, let me play your guy, and we'd do that, and say, okay, now John, you play that guy, what do you do? Calling up writers on the phone. You got any ideas? We're trying to work. Then meanwhile, the crew is tapping their foot in the stage, waiting for us to come on. We got the suits of marble and stuff in the trailer with us, saying, no, you wouldn't say that. You would think that they would, a $200 million movie, they would have this shit together, right? Just the opposite. Wow. And the reason for that is because they get ahead of themselves. They have a release date before they say, oh, we'll get the script by that time. And they don't have their shit together, But the fact that they had Bob and John at the helm, who dealt with it so well, it freaked me out. I was very anxious because I like to be prepared. I like to know my lines, man. That's like, that's my school where I come from. Know your lines, so you're not thinking about it, so that was very, very tough for me and irritating to me. And then I made a little self-adjustment. This happens, I guess, in life all the time, but in movies, a lot, where something's rubbing against your fur. It's not feeling right, and it's just the way it is, Now you can take a lot of energy, spend a lot of energy bitching about that, or you can figure out how you're going to do it, how you're going to play this hand that you've been dealt. So the one thing you can't control is how you're perceiving and what you're thinking about this thing. So I said, what we're doing here, we're making a $200 million student film. We're all just fucking around. We're playing. Oh, great. Then that took all the pressure, all that weight, Then, oh, okay, just jam, just play, fine. And that was, a big lesson to me. No?
No, I never know. That's wild. It turned out pretty good.
It turned out great. Are you kidding? It was wonderful. And that's John and Bob. And I guess Marvel, too, because they picked those guys,
Well, Downey was obviously, I remember when the casting decision had been announced, one of the first things I read was someone said, I guess Robert Downey Jr. is insurable again. That's something of a risk for a studio to take a chance on him at that time. But completely panned out.
Mm. Yeah, very good.
He's back on the horse. He's
back on the side. Is the second one come out yet? No.
No, it comes out May 2010. It's too bad they killed you off.
You
can't
get
a second one.
Mm. Yeah, keep telling me. Oh, no, it's just a comic book. Maybe we'll bring you back.
It's going to be fun to see Mickey Rourke if they're going crazy. What do you think of the, I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but what do you think of the...
Speaking of Mickey, just for a second, I thought, you know, in comic book movies, Sin City, huh? That was something. Didn't you think?
He was the best part of that.
Wasn't he incredible in that?
Yeah.
He should have won the Academy Award for that.
You think so, yeah.
Oh, God, what a performance.
A lot of people said, you know, last year everyone was saying this is Mickey's big comeback, and a lot of people would say, wait a minute, his comeback was Sin City.
I think so.
You know? 10 years ago. That's interesting.
And the way he, he just did a really beautiful.
Have you worked with him before? I guess Heaven's Gate.
Heaven's Gate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of his first things, I think.
He had a nice tribute at Santa Barbara last year. Festival. But I was going to ask about the Big Lebowski. What do you think of the cult of appreciation that surrounds that film and that character?
I love that.
Because you've created an iconic piece of pop culture there. It has to just make you feel good.
It's so gratifying because, you know, like we're doing with Crazy Heart, I was so pleased with the way that movie came out when we finished it. Now, when it kind of didn't do much, you know, when it first came out, that was very disappointing. Then there was a bigger hit over in Europe, and then it kind of splashed back over here, and now it's, you know, is what it is now. And it's very gratifying, you know. I've been to one of those festivals.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I played it. It was my Beatle moment, you know.
What is it?
Playing to a sea of dudes. I was, you know, up there with my band and the guys, and there's all these guys dressed up like the dude and bowling pins.
Are you ready for a first cup of coffee?
I'm good, thanks.
You okay? Can I make a new one for you, sir?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
And just, you know, screaming and excitement. It was wonderful. And it's great to have a, you know, a movie that I love being a part of and think it's such a great movie. I mean, I think it's a really a good movie. I mean, you know, maybe a comedy. People think of a lot of the Coen brothers, they're so good at what they do that it seems like it's nothing, you know, like it's improvisation. You know, on that one, no improvisation. Every line, every man, those are all scripted. You know,
they're very precise.
Very precise, and. You know, people maybe don't appreciate it, but to have the kind of appreciation that it's got now, people who watch it over and over again and really study it is just great. I just love that.
It's when I was in film school, there was a guy in my hall. He wanted people to call him the dude. He was obsessed with the movie.
Yeah.
He was hilarious. That was when I first saw it. Actually, I didn't see it in theaters or anything. I caught up with it on DVD video, just like a lot of people did. Well, like you say, it was in theaters. It didn't blow up, but when it hit the video, it started making the rounds. It became something else.
You want to direct?
Yeah, I went to the school for screenwriting. I'd like to direct, but like you say, it's a pretty demanding role in the industry, obviously.
I thought it was interesting that more people don't do what you're doing, interviewing people like Rod, you know, that was his, and Truffaut and Bogdanovich,
exactly.
That was their path, which just makes so much sense, you know.
I think that's why one of the reasons I get along with Rod so well is that we do have a similarity.
Yeah.
He's been nice enough to look at some of my work in the past.
Oh, that's great. So you've written scripts and stuff then?
Yeah, I have a few.
Cool.
I don't get to them enough, frankly, because my job is writing. It's the last thing I want to do at the end of the day is write.
Right.
But I love it when I can get to it. About the Big Lebowski. Last thing on that. Do people ask you? I'm curious about this. Do people ask you frequently if there was a lot of smoking going on the set?
I don't think they don't. I think they take it for granted that there was.
Yeah.
They don't ask me, but there wasn't. I was like,
I've heard there wasn't. Yes.
No, I mean, I you know, will indulge in and enjoy it occasionally, but for that one, I decided to not smoke it, you know, because of that precision that you were talking about.
Right.
And I had done enough smoking in my time that I, you know, could, you know, use a little sense of memory there and get back to it pretty easy. And you know, but the precision of the lines and wanting to you know, really, you know, serve the script that was there and have all my wits about me, so I didn't indulge in it.
Smart move.
Yeah.
Probably at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I hear that you, was it true that you would ask if this is a dude stoned in the scene and then you would rub your eyes?
Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah, you got to see, the dude was always stoned, basically.
Yeah, right.
But I made that mistake early in my career, you know. Oh, I'm playing a drunk scene, well, I'll just get drunk, you know. And that works for maybe, you know, a half hour, an hour, and then you got the rest of the day. And you can't maintain that.
I think what else I haven't covered here? Wide range. This is just going to be the second time you're going to toe ends on this next movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that movie this year?
I did. You like it? Wow. It's really, oh, it's really great. What's your take on it?
I think it's very universal, first of all. As far as it's clearly, you know, a movie rooted in the Jewish thing.
Yeah.
But there's something very universal about it. You know, just,
yeah.
The Job story is very universal. Why is this happening to me? What's it all about? I think anyone can relate to that. That's why I think it's so brilliant, because it's so saturated in the Jewish stuff, and yet it still has that kind of universal quality. It's, I think that's a testament to them, really.
I'm friends with a Jewish Zen master called, his name's Bernie Glassman. I don't know if you know him at all. Wonderful guy. He calls his Zen Fakakta Zen. The Yiddish word means crazy. Anyway, I was telling him about the Coen brothers and telling him he had to see it. I'm telling him it's kind of a Job thing. And he says, you know what they say about the Job story? He says, his problem was that he took things too personally.
That's great. That's kind of the point of the movie.
It is, isn't it?
That just makes this, it just deflates you, too. You're just like, oh.
And then what did you make at the end?
You can't stop what's coming. I think it's the end of No Country all over again, in a way. You can't stop what's coming. I think that it's really interesting.
How does it go? What's the last beat? Because
he's going to give the money back. And the kid turns around and there's the tornado out there. So it's like he's about to do good, but it doesn't matter. There's a tornado coming.
Right.
So it's like you can't stop what's coming. That was my take anyway.
Yeah.
But I think that movie could have multiple takes just because it's so abstract and so artistic. As refined as it is, it's just open to so many interpretations.
Yeah, it really is.
Have you seen anything else this year that just blew your mind?
Mm. That's kind of my favorite. I saw, I thought Maggie's Husband did a great job in
Education.
And that lady who was in that was very good. What else did I see? What did I see in my... You like documentaries? You know who Robert Downey Sr. is?
Sure.
He did a documentary called Rittenhouse Square.
Okay, I haven't heard of that.
That is really wonderful. It's takes place in a park in Philadelphia. And it's like a year in the life of a park and all the different people. It's worth checking out.
What's it called again?
Rittenhouse Square, okay. The name of the park.
I saw a documentary over the weekend called Food Inc. Have you seen that?
Oh, exactly. I heard that's good.
It's pretty gross, pretty rough, but yeah, it's very good. I mean, it's the best movie made about the food industry, I think, so far, for sure. Just, you know, everything that you kind of know anyway, but you're not confronted with visually constantly about how this happens, how this takes place. And there's more to it than that. They get into the idea that there's only five companies out there that control food distribution.
Is this the one about corn, too? About corn?
They touch on corn, but there's a documentary dedicated to that called King Corn.
Yeah.
That's a different
My girlfriend actually was telling me about that recently. She liked that a lot.
Uh-huh.
But they get into that in this movie as well, briefly, in one of the segments.
What was the most horrific thing?
I mean, to me, the most horrific thing is when you look at the conditions that cattle live in, and the feces that gets on everything, and how that establishes E. coli, and that's how you end up with 4-year-old kids dying because they ate jackrabbit bugs. It's just, and then they don't do anything about it. They wipe their hands of it, essentially.
Yeah. The environmental thing too about cattle, right? Wiping the rainforest out and
exactly.
All that.
Yeah.
That was such an inefficient way for us to get energy. You know.
It's one of those things where you look at it and just say, how is this not abundantly apparent that something is different happening?
Did you see the one about the dolphins too? Have you seen that?
I love
yet?
That. The code.
I haven't seen that, but I heard about it.
It's really, really powerful. Because it's an espionage film is what it ends up being, because they go and they plant these cameras where they're not supposed to be, and they have to do it all covert-like, and it's, that story is fascinating enough without the fact of the footage they got, and the footage they got isn't, you know, there's only like 3 minutes of footage that's kind of rough to watch. I think the misperception out there is that it's just dolphins getting slaughtered for an hour and a half, but that's not the movie. The movie is about them getting that footage. And when they finally get it, you see it. It's just, it's powerful, and it packs a punch for sure.
Did you see Man on a Wire?
Yeah.
Did you like that?
You know, I liked it. I wasn't as big of a fan as the rest of the industry was. I thought it was beautiful and very novel. When I see reenactments in movies, it kind of rubs me wrong, I guess.
Was that a reenactment?
They had a couple of reenactment scenes, and
I always thought that would make a great. A dramatization of that. I met Philippe Petit when we were shooting King Kong. You know the one that I was in.
Really? That long?
And well, we were there shooting at the towers. You know, the Twin Towers. You know, where King Kong falls off. And you know, the first day I'm there at the towers, I'm just arriving at work, and this little French guy comes up. Hello, do you like my temple? I said, what do you mean your temple? He says, oh, my temple. I live here. This is my temple. I said, what are you talking about? He says, oh, I cross this thing on the wire. I said, what are you talking about? And I said, oh, you were the guy. He says, oh, yes, yes. I said, oh, did you know how to juggle? And I said, no. And he starts to teach me how to juggle. And we kind of became friends. And it was the year 76 that he did that. You know.
Yeah.
And he was sentenced to perform a year for free in the park.
Right.
And what he would do, if you were in New York at the time, you just couldn't believe it. You know, you'd be walking down the street, and you'd look down the street and you'd say, am I seeing something? It looks like there's a guy on a unicycle holding onto a cab. He's coming this way. Oh, my God, he's coming right to me. Oh, no. He'd come at you. It would be like, you know, a Harpo. You know, he wouldn't speak. And he would get people to gather around. He'd find these, you know, three big guys. He'd tie a wire around to a tree or a lamppost, have these guys hold it like this, you know, and they wouldn't know what he was going to do, and then he would leap up and start to go on it, and then he would, you know, perform that way. Then he would jump off and get all these people that he now were assembled to get two lines and face each other, and he would get here like this at one end of the line. And he would get on his unicycle, and he'd take his head and go like this and time it just perfectly and catch a cab just as it went like it would take off. And the people were just looking at each other and saying, what was that? I thought it would make an amazing, dramatization about, friendship and, a guy following his crazy dream and all of that.
Getting caught up in the celebrity of it.
Oh, yeah. It was fascinating.
The story itself is most definitely intriguing. And I like seeing him at the Oscars, bouncing the Oscar on his chin and everything when they won. Do you go to the Oscars?
If I'm not. Really? Otherwise, the best seats at home.
So you've been, what, 4 times then? That's it? Cool. You're a member, I would assume. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the best seat is at home. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. So, what's going on? You know, is it kind of press all week, and then you're back up to the cover? Are they working hard?
What am I doing? I'm doing some press. You're doing some photos today. Tomorrow I'm going to go work on Tron a little bit.
How's that turn out? I was at Comic-Con this year. I liked what they did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, it's another first-time guy. I think this has got to be the record for the biggest budgeted film directed by a first-time guy.
Yeah.
And Joe Kaczynski, the guy who is directing it, is doing a wonderful job. I mean, he's so relaxed, confident, again, creates that cool atmosphere. And very inclusive, you know. He's allowing me to come in, take a look at some of my scenes and tweak them, and, you know, and doing ADRs, you know. It's fun. It's, you know, it's good. I think the effects are going to be really, you know, amazing. It's going to be released as 3D IMAX.
Yeah. Just what they've shown so far is amazing.
Yeah.
I like the score, too. The Doc Ock stuff
is
great. What do you think of the 3D wave in films lately? Do you think that's a novelty, or do you think that...
I haven't seen any. Are they good?
Well, you know, some of them utilize it, I think, correctly, which is, I think it's good to add... just this depth to things. That's what the Avatar footage looked like. That's what, like, Up, Pixar's Up had this. No. They start to use it as a gimmick where you're like reaching out at the audience and stuff. I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when it feels like a three-dimensional environment on the screen, that's really interesting. So hopefully it goes that direction.
There was a years ago, maybe about 20 years ago, I saw a thing called Show Scan. Do you know what that is? Douglas Trumbull, you know, the guy who did all the fix for 2001, came up with this idea of running film 60 frames per second through the thing, camera instead of 24, right? Which is 24 is the slowest, you can run it and still have natural action. It's a very primitive kind of method that they've kept to, you know. So what Trumbull did was run it 60 frames and projected at 60 frames. So basically what you're getting is a much more refined image, you know, and it's almost 3D. It's just so, you know, it's like high res. It's just basically like a higher res, you know. So you know, your eye could be fooled by the 24, but when you get that 60, it's amazing. Even just like what it reminded me of, just a simple close-up. You know, we're used to seeing movies how they are now, and you're a great photographer, but when you see it with this heightened reality, you see depth, and it's just quite a different experience. But the reason they didn't catch on is just too expensive. You know, they'd have to change all the projectors and everything. But they're going to be projecting things differently sooner or later.
Yeah, I think this is a time of change.
Oh, man.
Something's going to happen here. New standard will establish itself.
Yeah.